Welcome to Built to Go, a van life podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Wagg, coming to you from the College of Curiosity. This time it's episode 239, and we're going to talk about the topic that always gets me into trouble, self-defense. And in this case, we're going to talk about non-lethal, or shall we say less lethal, devices. We're also going to talk about the big flaw in power stations, or as some people call them, solar generators, a product review of a new self-stable TV dinner, and a place to visit that will sing to you, hopefully. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. Very happy to be back here with you. Hope you're happy to be back here with me. After all, you're the one who clicked the button, I hope. So I don't know why I decided to talk about this today, but every time I talk about essentially firearms, I get two kinds of comments. From my friends in the U.S., they say, why are you so afraid of guns? They're just tools like anything else. If you use them properly, there's no problem, etc., etc., etc. And then from my friends who aren't in the U.S., I hear, you guys are so crazy! And yeah, and I'm here in the middle. But I am going to talk about it because it is a topic that matters. It comes up. It is something that is real. And if you are traveling in the U.S. and you see a van or an RV or something like that, it is safest to assume that there is a firearm in that vehicle and you should act appropriately. I know that sounds crazy to those of you who are not in the U.S., but that is the way it is in the U.S. That said, I have made the decision never to reveal whether I carry a firearm or not. That's my business, and hopefully it will not be yours. I'm simply not going to state whether I do or not. I can tell you that if someone breaks into my van in the middle of the night, they're in for a very big surprise, and you can interpret that any way you wish. However, there are alternatives to firearms. You do not have to carry a gun to arm yourself with something else that could be useful in a situation where your life or the life of others around you is in danger. And I'm going to take a look at a few of those devices, and I am not recommending any of these. I have not tried them, but I will give my uneducated opinion as to issues and pros and cons of these things. And remember, you get what you pay for, and this is a free podcast. So the one that caught my attention today is called a Hero. The name right away, I don't like. Hero, that's not a word you want to use for a self-defense weapon, in my opinion. I don't know. I just don't like the connotations of hero in regards to combat in something you're trying to sell. That said, their device is a gun. It is not a gun that shoots projectiles with gunpowder. It looks like a toy gun, honestly. It looks like maybe a kid's water pistol, maybe. It's plastic. It has a gigantic trigger that you actually need two fingers to pull. That's a safety thing. A child would have a very hard time pulling the trigger on this, but an adult should be able to manage it with two fingers. And what it does is it shoots a ball of irritant. I believe it's Pava in this case, but it, you know, it's like a pepper spray in a ball type of a thing. And the idea is that if you are being attacked, you point this at somebody and shoot them with the pepper ball, and that will incapacitate them. That's the concept. And it has two shots per cartridge, it looks like. And you better not miss, because then it takes a while to reload the thing. It takes a cartridge, so it's actually very easy. You open it up, and a cartridge goes in there, and you close it, and then you're ready to go again. But if you were in a combat situation, you really wouldn't want to have to take the time to do that. The idea is that you get them the first time, and then you remove yourself from the situation. They are not non-lethal. They are less lethal. I think that's an important distinction. You could kill somebody with one of these things if you hit them in just the right place, or you cause them to behave differently and that behavior caused them to, say, crash a car or something like that. Yeah, these could be lethal, but they're certainly a lot less lethal than a traditional pistol. And this is something you would ostensibly carry in your pocket, or you could carry it on your hip or something like that. And you could also use it against animals if that was an issue. Coyotes come up a lot, although I've never been threatened by a coyote despite encountering them all the time. Bears, yeah, I mean, if it was a bear charging me, why not hit it with this thing? Although I would argue this is going to be a lot less effective than bear spray. More on that later. This is mostly for people. Okay, so that's the one I was looking at first today. It's called the Hero. You get the idea. But it's not the only product like that. There's an older one called a Byrna that is very similar, except it's much more like a traditional handgun. In fact, it looks like a handgun. You can get an orange one or a black one that you would actually think somebody was holding a 9mm pistol if they were holding this thing and pointing it at you, which could be a problem. But let me explain how the Byrna works. The Byrna doesn't use this cartridge system. The Byrna has a CO2 cartridge, which is common in many air guns, and also for making whipped cream, maybe. And you fill it with these balls, and you can buy the balls any different way you want. You can buy the pepper balls, you can buy just hard balls, and you can buy practice balls that are biodegradable, and which I think is important. One of my issues with the Hero model is that there's really no good way to practice with it. And you do have to practice with these things. Holy cow, imagine trying to figure out how this thing worked in the moment that you needed it. You want to be practiced in how to operate the thing. And I haven't found a way to practice with the Hero, and those cartridges are really expensive. I'll talk to you about that in a second, too. With the Byrna, you can actually buy practice rounds, and heck, if you can find them again, you could reuse them and realize how this thing works. Now, the projectiles come out of this thing at 350 feet per second, which is far slower than a gun. But yeah, it could still be lethal if you hit somebody in the eye or just the right place, you know, in the solar plexus or something like that. You absolutely could kill someone with these things, but that's not its purpose. Are these devices legal? Well, yes and no and maybe, because none of this is easy. First off, back to regular firearms, the big issue, well, all right, I'm not going to say the big issue. A big issue with them is that state laws in the U.S. and even city-to-city laws vary drastically, and you basically have to become a legal expert on where it's legal to carry these weapons and not, and how they can be carried in order to travel from state to state. Massachusetts has one set of laws, California has another, Texas has another. They're all very different, and they're not actually predictable. Some states that we think of as gun-friendly actually have some restrictive laws. Other states that we think are very restrictive, turns out, not a big deal if you're carrying the weapon in your car. It has to be unloaded in some. It can be loaded in others. Ammunition needs to be stored separately. Anyway, you get it, on and on. It changes all the time. There are local ordinances that override city law. For example, New York State has one set of laws and New York City has another. It's complex. So an argument for these less lethal pepper ball guns is that they're more legal. And in fact, they are legal in all 50 U.S. states. However, they are not legal in Canada. If you have one of these in Canada, you could face 5 years in prison. So there's that. Also, they are not legal to be owned if you have a felony on your record in several states. Time out here. I'm not a lawyer. I am not giving any legal advice. If you are considering getting one of these things, be darn sure you look into the legality of it. I'm just explaining the things I've seen today. It is illegal to possess these less lethal weapons for folks with a felony in certain states, so you have to look into that. Now, all that said, do they offer more protection than nothing? Well, yeah, I mean, sure. Are they better than tasers? There are some arguments that they're better than tasers because most tasers work with a wire or you have to make direct body contact. With these, you can be farther away and you're not connected to the person who's the problem in any way, shape, or form. The idea is that you would deploy this pepper ball and then leave the situation while that person was incapacitated. That's how they're supposed to work. But there's some other issues. They're expensive. You're talking, boy, you could be spending $400, $500 for these things. And the problem with them being that expensive is that, well, then you may be reticent to use them. And that actually might be a good thing or a bad thing. But you may be in the situation where, like, oh, this guy's going to cause me trouble. He's walking towards me, but boy, it's going to cost me $100 to replace this thing. Actually, that's how much it costs for 5 pepper balls for the Burna, is $100. So, I mean, I don't know. If you were really under threat, I hope you wouldn't hesitate to use it, but they're expensive. This is not something that's easy to get to. Now, the Hero brand, they also sell this other thing that's called an Aero, A-I-I-R-O. And it looks like an old cell phone or a remote control, but you press the button and it shoots liquid out of it, like 2 sprays of pepper juice that's very sticky. And I don't know. I'm less of a fan of that, because if you miss, then you're done. And that is a big point. It's hard to hit something with a pistol. Pistols are not a very accurate weapon, and anything that shoots a projectile, you do need to train with to be accurate, especially in a moment where you're under stress. So you might miss, and then what do you do? Then you're in big trouble, because then you've made whatever it is that you're trying to defend yourself from angry. Now, reports are that if you do hit somebody with this, it is pretty effective. There is some debate over whether you actually need the pepper at all. For some attackers, just hitting them with a projectile at 350 feet per second, which will hurt and at least cause a big bruise, is enough to get them to rethink what they're doing. But in certain cases, there are people who are highly motivated and will not be deterred by pain. And, well, I don't know if these things are going to be effective or not. So, bottom line is, these things are available. If they sound appealing to you, do a lot of research into them. And I have a link in the show notes from somebody who actually knows what he's talking about the pros and cons of the Burna. The Hero is just a different form of the Burna that is probably easier in some ways, yet is more expensive, and I don't know how you practice with it. All that said, I will tell you one thing that I do have in my van, and that is bear spray. So, you've heard of pepper spray, you know, the little things, a lot of women carry them in their purses, they make a special one just for mailmen, it's particularly effective against dogs who are attacking. Bear spray is not the same thing. Bear spray is similar chemicals, these are all capsaicin-based, or capsicum, or, you know, something like that. Sometimes it's synthetic, it doesn't matter. It's a chemical irritant. What's different about bear spray is what it does. It doesn't spray on something. It creates a cloud barrier of irritant. And the idea is that once the bear enters that cloud, it gets it all over its fur, it inhales it, and then the only way for it to escape that situation is to go back the way it came from, giving you time to escape. That's the concept behind bear spray. You're making a wall of irritant. And while it is actually not legal to use bear spray against people, if you're in extremis, you're probably going to use whatever you have available to protect yourself. So that's all I'll say about that. Also, regarding Canada, who does not allow pepper spray, by the way, pepper spray for personal protection is not allowed in Canada, and using bear spray in that way is definitely not allowed in Canada. But bringing bear spray to Canada for use against bears is absolutely legal. So I have bear spray in my van because sometimes I camp where there are bears and I like having it there. And I think in some cases it is a good barrier between me and whatever might be trying to attack me. And it is pretty non-lethal. I mean, there are some cases where if somebody has breathing problems. Oh, I said somebody. There are some cases where something may have breathing problems and inhale this stuff and then die because they couldn't breathe. Sure, that could happen. This isn't something you want to do on a lark. But if you're in a situation where safety is a concern, I think bear spray is pretty good. As a side note, there are folks who recommend wasp spray. Now, again, wasp spray is not legally used against people. That is not legal. But it does often have the effect of being able to spray for 20 feet. However, it really doesn't hurt as much as you think. Wasp spray is much less likely to deter somebody than bear spray or even pepper spray. So, folks, there's a whole bunch of information. I want you to know that these things are available. I want you to know that you need to do a lot of research before you consider having them in your van or deploying them. But this is an option. And I feel like it's the purpose of this show to provide you with options and let you make your own choices. please make good ones. Thanks to all the folks who support this ad-free program at buymeacoffee.com/built-to-go. You folks, by buying me a gallon of diesel, help me keep ads off the podcast. Nobody wants the ads. I don't want them. You don't want them. And I really appreciate the folks who take a moment and buy me a gallon of diesel, especially those who do it every single month. If you'd like to help support the podcast, please visit buymeacoffee.com/built-to-go. That's 2 T's, not 3, not 1. And I thank you. Van Life News. Well, folks, Starlink is finally starting to get some competition. I know Amazon has been trying to launch some satellites for their own system, but more importantly, I think, in the interest of competition making things better for everybody, Europe is about to launch a Starlink rival. And boy, I hope this takes off. No pun intended. It's called Iris, or Iris Squared, or two, or I actually don't know how they pronounce it, but there's 200 of these satellites that are supposed to go up by 2030. Yeah, it's going to take a while. And then Starlink will have competition. There'll be another similar constellation of satellites up there that will give internet. And I think that's actually a very, very good thing. Now, Starlink is by far basically the only name in the game right now. Other companies are trying to get in there. But Starlink is very, very expensive. And I think having a few other companies in the waters will help make internet more available for everybody. And I actually kind of think this is the future. I mean, I can imagine a day where we're always connected all the time, no matter where we go. And we're getting closer to that. And this European Starlink is a good idea. I have an article in the show notes from The Verge that talks more about this, but yay. Also, the FordAuthority.com has recently reported that Ford Transit sales numbers have come out, and the Ford Transit is still the number one van in the United States by far. However, sales have slipped a little bit. They have. And we're not really sure why. It's interesting. They talk about how the Ford Transit is selling more and more vans in places other than in the U.S., but in the U.S., the sales have slipped a little bit. But they're still by far number one. The number two van is the ProMaster, who also slipped a bit, but they are comfortably in number two. And the number three van, the Chevrolet Express, or the GMC Savannah, depending on how you look at it. Weirdly, the number four van is the Ford E-Series. Now, we may say, well, the Econolines haven't been made since 2014, Jeff. What are you talking about? Well, they still make the cutaways. They still make RV and box truck versions of the Econoline 350, 450, 550 platform. So they're still made. It's kind of amazing. This thing has lived on and on and on, and it's still on the list. What isn't on the list? Sprinters. Sprinters aren't even on this list. I guess they're only doing American brands, even though basically I think of a ProMaster as a Fiat from Italy. But they did not come up on this list at all. But I can tell you that their sales are below any of these. And finally, some news that shouldn't be too unexpected. If you need solar panels, you should buy them now. when the administration in the U.S. changes over on January 20th, the thought is that new tariffs are going to make the cost of certain things like lithium batteries and solar panels and all that stuff much, much more expensive. So if you know you're going to do a build and you've got your solar spec'd out, you should probably get that solar right away. Not only that, any kind of tax incentives or credits for solar are probably also going to go away. So now is the time to jump on solar panels. And I don't have any recommendations for you right now. Just go to all the normal solar panel things and get what's best. There's lots of resources out there. One thing that is actually looking like it might change, which is significant and not necessarily obvious, is obviously the tariffs are going against China. And remember, tariffs are paid for by the people buying the product, not the people making the product. China does not pay your tariffs. You pay your tariffs. But China often tries to get around tariffs by sending products to Vietnam and having them rebranded and then shipped from Vietnam as though they're actually made in Vietnam. Or maybe in Vietnam they put a little piece on there and say, hey, it's made here. They're looking to kill that loophole too. So by all accounts, there's a very good chance that solar panels are going to go up in price, maybe 30% or so. So it's time. If you want to buy solar panels, you want to jump on it. I'll have a link in the show notes from Mother Jones, which talks about that issue in more depth. But yeah, if you're going to buy products that come from overseas, and you know you want to buy them, I'm not saying to rush into anything, it may be time to actually pull the trigger and buy those things. Same is true if you need to renew your passport. There's a lot of talk about how the passport office is probably going to be less efficient next year. So if you have a passport to renew, as I do, you might want to get on that as soon as you can. Tech Talk. Power stations, aka solar generators, even though they are not solar and do not generate anything, are something I've been talking about a lot lately. I like them. I think they're a great idea, especially if you're doing a no build. You have all your electrical stuff in one thing and it's easy. You don't have to do any wiring. It's like, hey, this is done. Let me go worry about plumbing now or something else. There's something that's wrong with these things, though. And our friend Big Rob over at Big Rob's Van, a YouTube channel I recommend you check out. Well, they haven't talked about this yet, but I talked about him in our Discord channel about a problem he's had. He has an All Powers 2500, or R2500. This is a fairly beefy unit here. This is a good size power station that can easily power most uses in a van. And he's on his second one, and he'll soon be on his third. Why? Because they fail on him. Now, he's very gentle on his batteries. He even has a protective pad for them so they don't rattle around too much. And yet, they're still failing on him. The first one failed pretty quickly after he got it. This one lasted 6 months, and now it's giving him an error code that's not even in the manual. Now, in All Power's defense, he was able to get through customer support, and they will take it back for a return, and, you know, that's good. He found a company that is actually responsive, which isn't necessarily the case. But that responsiveness is, mail us back this 65-pound battery at your own expense, and we'll send you a new one. That means Rob is going to be without his battery or his any power at all until he gets this thing back. Now, I know Rob, I know he's got redundancies. He's going to make it. He's going to be okay. But this is something of a lesson for the rest of us, is if you have an all-in-one power station, remember that if anything goes wrong in it, you lose everything. Whereas if you build your own power system and say the inverter goes bad or a fuse blows or you kill the battery somehow or whatever, you just have to replace that one component. It's quite possible that the only thing wrong with Rob's power station is that a fuse blew. But it's a non-user serviceable part. He can't fix it. He's got to mail it back in, and that means he's got no power for that entire time. Does that mean you shouldn't get a power station? No, of course not. You should get what works for the build you're doing. But just keep in mind that when you do anything that's all in one, whether it's a diesel heater or a power station or whatever, you then have all your eggs in one basket, and if any of the eggs break, you have to replace them all. So, word to the wise. And Rob, if you're listening, I hope this gets resolved very quickly, and thank you for sharing the story, and I hope we can all learn something from it. For me, my personal preference is for a fully built-out van to have its own power system built into it, and then a power station as backup. But if you're doing a no-build, I recommend you have a main power station, and if you can, have a smaller, more portable one. So maybe 2000 to 3000 series and say a 500 series to be redundant and also portable, so you can like easily carry it out to the picnic table or whatever. Thanks, Rob, and learn from his suffering. Product review. You have probably heard of Hormel Completes. These are like frozen TV dinners that don't need to be frozen. They're shelf stable, and you can just keep them in the van for whenever you want them. You don't have to worry about them actually freezing or getting too hot or whatever. They just sit in your van, and when you want to use them, you heat them up, whether in the microwave or, even though there's only microwave directions on these things, you can heat them up in a pot just fine, or you can just stick them on your dashboard on a hot sunny day, and that will heat them up just fine too. But there were no other brands. There was just Hormel Completes, and you know, they had like meatloaf and some kind of chicken dumpling thing, and you know, that was it. Well, now Ben's Original, formerly Uncle Ben's, I guess he lost all his nieces and nephews because now he's just Ben. Ben's Original has a new line of products called Street Food, and I've found three different flavors. There's probably more, but it's the same idea as the Hormel Completes. They're just a very different flavors. The one I have just tried is the Ben's Original Street Food Jamaican Jerk-Styled Red Beans and Rice with Chicken. Now, these are the same thing. It's like an elongated plastic bowl filled with the food with a plastic cover on it. And the instructions say that you're supposed to peel back a corner, stick it in the microwave for 90 seconds, let it sit 1 minute, and then enjoy. Now, I know from experience that, as I said before, you don't actually need the microwave. You just have to heat the food up, and it doesn't matter how you do it. It totally works to just throw this in a pot and heat it up. That's fine. And I do like that it's a different experience. You know, the honestly, none of the Hormel completes are very good. You know, they're food if you need it. You know, if you've been hiking all day and you're tired, you just want to go to bed, but you want to eat something first, it doesn't take very much time or effort to whip one of these things out and cook it. Now Ben's has these rice bowls, basically. They're called street food, but they're a different, they're different types of rice bowls. And so I tried it, and it's food. It's definitely food. I can recognize that. It has 400 calories, so you know you can get some nourishment out of it. It's got a lot of protein, and it's got a 25% of your daily protein. That's pretty good. 23% of your daily carbs. 25% of your daily sodium, of course. 12% of your daily fat, and 35% of some vitamins. Anyway, it's nutrition, but is it good? Yeah. No, I'm sorry. It's fine. You know, if you're just trying to get a fast meal, it's fine. But if I went to a restaurant and ordered Jamaican jerk style red beans and rice with chicken, I would want a lot more than this. First off, there's not very much chicken in it. There's a picture on the box that shows these chunks of chicken. I found two, I think. There's not a lot of chicken in these. And then the rice is just, I don't know, it's dry, and it's just not that very exciting. So, do I recommend these things? Well, I got them at half price. So, if I can get them again at half price, I may get a few and put them in the van. I think what I would do with them, though, is to use them as a base for something else. Or, if I were making a soup or stew, I would dump one of these things in there. What they're good at is being shelf-stable. They don't need to be refrigerated, and they don't need any prep. And that can be really useful in a van when you're in a tight space and don't necessarily have a lot of time or a way to clean up. So, yeah, I think they're worth having, but I will not say that they're good. Also, though, this is kind of nice. They come in a cardboard box that you can recycle or burn or whatever. And then they have that piece of plastic you have to peel off. You have to throw that out. But the plastic container it comes in, you can either recycle, which, you know, plastic recycling is pretty much a scam. It doesn't necessarily exist. Or you can just use it as a plate. And I think it's a nice plate for using in the camper or even just as a pet dish kind of a thing. It's substantial enough that you could wash and reuse this thing. And if you're worried about the black plastic thing, I should probably even do that as a separate segment. But first off, the black plastic thing was not true. They just released that the scientific study that showed that black plastic was dangerous was actually flawed. So you don't actually have to throw away all your black plastic stuff. But second, this is white plastic. So it didn't even have that problem to begin with. But it's clearly meant for food because food comes in it and you can heat it up, so we know. So anyway, that's Ben's Original Street Food. I'll have a link in the show notes if you want to take a look at it. If you happen to see it on the shelf, yeah, go ahead and give it a try. Don't expect a gourmet meal, but if you're looking for just some nourishment that's very quick and easy, it absolutely foots that bill. Tales from the Road. So I used to go to school at Barry University in Miami Shores, Florida. Now, the area around Miami has all these places named this, Miami that. There's Miami Shores, Miami Lakes, Miami Pools, Miami Beach. It just goes on and on and on. One of those places is Miami Shores, which is not on the shore. Of course, because why would it be? Well, Barry University is a school, started out as Barry College, and one of their big programs they have down there is podiatry, but I went down there to study marine biology. I was a biology major, and I thought, you know what? I'm going to move to Florida and learn all about marine biology, and at that time, I thought that's what I wanted to do. I only spent a year at Barry University. I did not graduate from there, but I was fortunate that while I was attending there, my parents decided to take the money that they had set aside for me for dormitory expenses and instead buy a condo with it. If you can believe that, it was actually very smart. It cost them less to buy a condo on Miami Beach than it would have to actually pay the monthly expenses for dormitory and all that stuff. And so I lived in a two-bedroom condo right on Miami Beach all by myself while I was going to school here. I'm pretty fortunate, pretty privileged, you might say. I totally recognize that. But I also worked. I bought my own groceries, all that kind of stuff. And I had to commute to school. So, you know, it wasn't a perfect solution, but it was pretty nice, and I liked it. And so since I was down there studying marine biology, I thought, well, I should have an aquarium. But I didn't have a lot of money, so I bought the cheapest aquarium I could, you know, your normal 10-gallon glass aquarium, put it on the counter, got the gravel, got the necessary filter, but I didn't have anything in it. Fish are expensive. What am I going to put in here? And I wanted a saltwater aquarium. I'd always heard that saltwater aquariums were more difficult than freshwater aquariums. But I found that after I got mine set up, it was actually a lot less maintenance. I had fewer problems with algae, and it stayed cleaner. And I think as long as you understand the chemistry of keeping the salt balance, right? Salt aquariums are actually easier. But I still didn't have any animals. But I lived on the ocean. So my thought was, there's an ocean. I will go get animals. And that's what I did. Several times a week when I was in between classes and in between working at the Publix down the street, I would dive into the surf right at the Newport Pier. If you're familiar with the Sunny Isles area of Miami Beach, this is where this was. I was in Plaza of the Americas. It looks totally different now. But I would go across the street to the Newport Hotel and go under the pier, and I would find all kinds of things. I even caught some fish just with a simple net. Little tiny fish, but that's all I wanted. And I created this little Miami Beach ecosystem in the tank. One of the things I caught at the time I thought was a baby lobster. And it was a baby Maine lobster. And I thought that was very strange because Maine lobsters don't live in Florida. The rock lobsters live in Florida, not Maine lobsters with the big claws. But this thing had big claws. It was just a few inches long. I found out later it was a pistol shrimp, which is an amazing animal. You should definitely look up pistol shrimp if you've not heard about them before, because they can snap their claws so fast that it boils the water, actually at temperatures hotter than the sun, and it creates a noise so loud that it generates light. That's probably the least believable thing I've ever said on this podcast, and yet it's 100% true, so you can go look that up. And I had one of these things in my tank. But then one day I thought, you know, I haven't cleaned the tank was up against the wall. I hadn't cleaned in between the tank and the wall. I thought, well, I better move this and clean over there. And I stupidly, and you should never do this, grabbed the top of the tank on the side and pulled. Essentially, I was pulling on a piece of glass that had to then support the weight of 10 gallons of water. And of course, it didn't. The glass shattered. Water started filling up the condo, and I had all my critters in there looking up as the water drained over them, all the fish and the little barnacles that I had on pieces of wood and all that kind of stuff that I had in there, and my pistol shrimp. So what do you do? Well, I gathered up the critters. I, like, screw the water. I'll have to clean all that up. But I saved the critters and put them in a Tupperware thing. But as it happened, I was going to be heading back to Massachusetts in a month, and I was like, well, do I get another aquarium? What do I do? And so I went back across to the pier and under the pier and into the surf, and I let them all go. It turns out that they just had a little vacation with me and getting fed fresh shrimp and all the other stuff I was feeding them, and then back into the ocean with them, where they continued their eventful lives, because those critters had an eventful life. Compared to most of their species, that was an odd life that they had, and I'm sure when they told their friends about it, their friends didn't believe them either. So that's something you can do. If you want to have an aquarium, you can have an aquarium in your van, but consider making it temporary. This is your temporary aquarium. While you're camped in this campground next to this lake, you can have some critters visit you, but then when you leave, let them go, and then you'll both have stories to tell. A place to visit. I was thinking about all the places I've recommended and, like, which states have I spent not enough time on? And I came to mind at Louisiana. I don't think I've spent enough time talking about Louisiana, which is a fascinating state. And so today's the day. I'm going to talk about Louisiana. And I'm going to talk about New Orleans. Okay, but I'm going to talk about someplace that I'll bet none of you have ever been in New Orleans, including me. but my next time in New Orleans, I'm definitely going to go there. And it's a tree. Yeah, you know I like trees, but this is a very special tree. And it's actually not the tree that's so special. There's a lot of special trees in New Orleans. If you love trees, New Orleans has a lot of really cool trees. But this one is called the singing tree. Now, why would you have something called a singing tree? Well, the tree itself is a 100-year-old live oak, which if you're familiar with the oaks of the north, live oaks are quite different. They're called live oaks because they actually don't lose their leaves, or at least not all at the same time. They lose them one at a time. So they're basically green all year round. It's a cool tree. It's in the middle of a park. It's beautiful all by itself. But what makes the tree extra special is that an artist named Jim Hart filled it with wind chimes. And that's cool, too, except that he's an artist. So obviously it had to be more than just wind chimes. Anybody can go buy a bunch of wind chimes and put them in the tree and say, here, it's a singing tree. No, these are tuned. These are special wind chimes that are tuned to work well together. And it's supposed to emulate a West African gospel hymn, as well as New Orleans jazz. It's in the pentatonic scale, and they're all tuned. That means when the wind blows, you get this harmony of sound coming from the tree that's ever-changing, and it sounds really cool. It's a cool thing. And you just go to this big city park. It's called City Park. It's not actually a place that tourists go, but it's called City Park. It's right in New Orleans. That's actually outside what the tourist district of New Orleans. And you can put out a blanket or just sit on a chair and just listen to this tree sing to you. Now, this is the kind of place that sounds to me like something that's not going to last very long. You know, like people are going to climb the tree and steal the wind chimes or whatever. But I have reports of it being still there as late as March of 2024, and I have reports of it being installed much earlier than that. So I'm hopeful that it's still there. Do me a favor. Next time you're in New Orleans, visit the singing tree or the singing oak of New Orleans. You can find it on Google. I'll have a link in the show notes with the latitude and longitude. It's in City Park, big live oak all by itself, and you should be able to hear it as you're approaching it. Go visit, let me know if it's still there, and tell me how wonderful it is. Resource recommendation. So since we were talking about self-defense earlier, I thought, well, what about a self-defense resource? And it occurs to me that one of the primary lessons in self-defense is to never need it. You know the definition of a successful fort? A successful fort is one that has never been fired upon or fired a shot in anger. That's a good fort. That's a fort that did its job. The fort is there for deterrence, not to actually fight. It'll fight if it has to, but you hope that it never has to. Well, similar with people. If you can avoid a situation where you need to worry about self-defense, that is much better. So I found an article. Basically, this is an article written for women, but it talks a lot about how to get out of situations before they turn violent. And then it tells you some key things on what to do when it happens. There are many, many resources like this. I am linking you to this one to at least expose you to the idea that the things you do and the ways you respond to things can have an impact on how serious a situation is. I think that's a good lesson in and of itself. And then this talks about some details about things like, if you get knocked down, that's okay. The fight isn't over. That is maybe when you can actually do some damage, because people who knock you down think the fight is over at that point, but actually they're not prepared to defend somebody who's on the ground attacking them. There's a whole field of martial arts like that. Anyway, take a look at this article. It's just a PDF. It's from ucdc.edu. Link in the show notes. But I think that's probably the most important lesson about self-defense is don't need it. Make sure you are doing everything you can to never need it. Doesn't matter what you do, sometimes you'll need it and there's nothing you can do about it. But avoid those times that you can avoid. Well, folks, thank you very much for listening to episode 239. Music, as always, is by Simon Wagg. And also Other Son is producing a lot of great music now. So if you'd like to hear the music my kids are making, you can search for Simon Wagg or Fisher Wagg. They're both making very different kinds of music. And honestly, I'm a little biased, but it's pretty good. Until next time, remember the words of Ibn Battuta, who said, "Traveling, it leaves you speechless, then turns you into a storyteller."